With great mojo comes great responsibility. Mojo 5-0. Mojo
5-0. We will make America great again.
Sam Sorbo.
I'm your host, Sam Sorbo, here on Mojo50.com. Thanks so much for joining me and also for sharing my podcast with friends and family. We're trying to get truth out. It seems like people are sort of reluctant to discuss issues now because they're afraid of being silenced. And I'm finding that more and more. But we're going to talk about stuff here. CHOP is being disbanded. They're being repoliced. That's brand new in the news. BLM is being accused of hijacking the Black movement, the Black Lives movement. And so I want to talk a little bit about that. MasterCard is changing its name. Yeah, because Master, you can't have Master in the name of the card. No, we'll get into that too. And we'll have a little bit of fun as well. Before I get to all of that, I want to bring in my guest. Brent Magnuson is the author of a new book called Roger Up, The Blueprint for Living Life to the Fullest and Thriving in the Face of Adversity for Such a Time as This. Brent, am I right?
Absolutely, Sam. Real pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, so he's obviously an author. He's also a professional speaker and a former U.S. Army engineer. He's an adventure seeker, an avid practitioner of Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I practice vocal jiu-jitsu. That's what I do.
Awesome. Do they have a belt system for that?
They don't.
Yeah.
The belt system is very simple. I win, my adversary loses.
Well, hey, that's about the most effective martial art I've heard of. So
okay. So first and foremost, where does the title Roger Up comes from? And I'm asking because I think that Roger itself, the name has a certain significance, right?
It does. So Roger, most people are familiar with the term Roger That, which in the military it essentially confirms a transmission. But Roger Up is a term we use in the Army. It would be the same as in the civilian world saying, suck it up, embrace the suck, man up, woman up. Basically, when things are going really bad and you don't think your body or your mind can go any further, you embrace that Roger Up mantra, that mindset, and you keep pushing because, believe it or not, your body and your mind most of the time have at least 20 or 30% more fight left in it.
So you're not really thinking about Roger at all.
No, I only know a couple of Rogers, and they're older guys, so I don't know how much Rogering up they're doing, but okay. Roger Stone's probably
Rogering up a little bit.
Rogering up a little bit, unfortunately, but yeah. So it's a big military term, and trying to make it a little more popular and prevalent in the civilian world.
Okay, my understanding is this book has a lot of sort of thrill stuff in it because you really want to get people excited about what is it? Is it just taking life on, taking life by the grabbing life by the horns kind of a thing? Is that what this is about?
It really is. I mean, it's at its core, it's a get off the couch and go for a walk kind of on steroids type of book. In the self-help personal development space, I'm not really a big fan of either of those categories, but in this space, you have a lot of fluff and you have a lot of regurgitated stuff going back to Think and Grow Rich from Napoleon Hill. And a lot of people are just reading the Think and Grow Rich book or a Tony Robbins book, regurgitating it with their own spin and putting it out there. And unfortunately, this whole idea of self-help or personal development gets really watered down. So my goal with it was to take all of the very important lessons that I learned from the military, take everything I've learned from being an entrepreneur, all of my successes, a ton of failures, and put that into a fun read with some good storytelling and just practical stuff that you can actually take and put into action, not next month, not next week, but actually put into action today. And that was the whole goal.
So a lot of stories in that. Are they stories from your time in the Army?
Yeah, I do. I have some stories going back to 1998, my first deployment to Bosnia. I talk about the first month we were there in June. I live in Chicago. well, the suburbs of Chicago. And Bosnia summers are much like the hot, sticky Chicago summers I was used to, along with some very wet and cold winters that Chicago has. And with that, we were in a brand new army base being built, surrounded by bad guys. And for the first 4 or 5 weeks, we didn't have any hot water. So we took cold showers for the first 4 or 5 weeks. And at the time, it wasn't that fun. And as it went on, some of the alpha males in first platoon decided that it would turn into a competition and who could stay in the longest, kind of earning your stripes. And ever since then, I've taken that. And at that time, I was just a 19, 20-year-old kid who was on his first deployment. And then after I really started researching and looking into the effect of cold water therapy and cold showers, especially first thing in the morning, and then I started realizing that it's the number one thing Tony Robbins does and Tim Ferriss and some of the people that I follow and I'm a fan of, I really started looking into the science of it and realizing, wow, there's nothing better than shocking your system in the morning. And so that's just one of the stories from the book that and how it relates to what I'm doing now, you know, 20, 21 years later.
You talk about developing a samurai mindset. What is that?
So I'm obsessed with history in several. I mean, obviously, American history is a big thing for me, but I've really been enamored with the samurai. Obviously, they did some bad things, but I'm focused solely on their mindset and how they were as warriors, how they went into battle. And I've done a lot of reading on Musashi and some of the most famous samurai, and they all have some real similarities in that everything was focused on the battle and everything else came second. And that's kind of a medieval mindset to have. But if you look at the way things are now, we have such political divide. We have racial divide. There's tremendous economic issues. The coronavirus has turned this whole country upside down. And the media is, you know, the mainstream media is doing a phenomenal job of scaring everyone. And you don't know if you're supposed to wear a mask or not wear a mask. Can you shake someone's hand? Can you not? And the way I'm looking at the world right now, especially being about 17 minutes outside of the city of Chicago, is it's like a battlefield out there. And I think more of us, you know, need to adapt a samurai mindset rather than a victim mindset, because I think that's what the vast majority of the mainstream media wants. They want us to be scared. They want us to be sheep. And unfortunately, in this country, roughly 80% of the population are sheep. The other 10% are wolves. Those are the bad ones, the rapists, the murderers, the vast majority of politicians, big pharma. You can go on and on. And then the other 10%.
You're quite cynical. You seem like such a nice guy starting out. Now I'm seeing the cynic in you.
Well, okay. it's just the reality. And then, unfortunately, the last 10% are the sheepdogs. And in the animal world, the sheepdog, just one of them, can protect an entire flock or herd of sheep.
Okay.
And our sheepdogs are police. And there are some bad sheepdogs. But at the end of the day, there's a tremendous 95% of them are good. The sheepdog is the protector. The sheepdog is the one thing that comes to help when the sheep is trying to be slaughtered by the wolf. And I think right now we need to adapt more of a sheepdog mentality, because the wolf is out there and the sheep are definitely out there.
Not only that, I'll just throw this in. We just moved and we've entered a community that I'm finding more and more is very cohesive. And I think that this is more common than perhaps I know across the United States. But this community pulled together when they saw what was happening to the police, unjustly, really, to the police, because the whole nation united behind the sense of horror of what happened to George Floyd. The whole nation condemned it. There weren't people out there saying, no, he got what was coming to him. Nobody was on that train, right? And yet somehow it's become controversial, right? Because there are people who just want to create controversy. Everybody saw that video and said, that is wrong. There's just no two ways about it. That's wrong. What I'm saying is there's a community here and banded together and put together gift baskets to give to the families who have officers who are serving. They just said, you know, we have some families in our community who have officers who are serving. police officers, and we want to gift to them so that they know that there are people out there who not only support them, but are willing to, you know, show that they support them. And so you're calling for more sheepdogs. Totally agree with you there. But I'm also calling for people who, because we are a very timid population now. As a result of the way that we've been educated, we are timid. We're too timid to be wrong. We're too timid to speak up. We've been taught to sit quietly, raise your hand before asking a question, you know, wait till you're called on to speak, that kind of a thing. And so, unfortunately, you're going to have trouble rounding up some sheepdogs, but you can train the sheep to show appreciation, to support, right?
Absolutely. And that's, you know, the police is a really hot topic right now. And we mentioned, you mentioned Brazilian jiu-jitsu earlier. I'm an avid practitioner of jiu-jitsu. I've been training for years, and I train with a lot of law enforcement, from local PD to sheriffs to FBI, Department of Homeland Security, DEA, Marshal Service. I train with a whole slew of these folks. And, you know, you're hearing a lot about defunding the police. And first and foremost, that is, that's just one of the craziest things I've ever heard. And it's being pushed by people that are obviously ignorant, or more importantly, uneducated on the whole situation. Meaning the idea of defunding the police simply means that you don't want to have the police getting access to what they need.
I heard that Hitler defunded the police before he instituted the SS.
It's funny. I was actually going there, and it's a scary thing. And, you know, unfortunately, so often history repeats itself. The problem is we need to increase funding for the police. And let me briefly explain, because a lot of people get this misconstrued with me just being a police lover and not recognizing. Listen, there are bad cops out there. There are a tremendous amount of cops that go into the force, you know, because they were bullied in school. And now they have a badge and a gun, and they've got some authority.
Not a tremendous number. And I hate the fact that we have to, like, issue that caveat. Like, hey, just this disclaimer, because not everybody is perfect. It's so ridiculous. It should go without saying that not everybody's perfect. But by and large, our police are there to protect and serve. And people who seek out to become police are not doing it because they want to siphon off money from a drug bust. They're doing it because they want to protect and serve.
Right. And I agree. And it's just important to put that there are different police officers that have different motives when they go on. The long story short is the vast majority of police are hardworking people that are doing what they want to do, and that's protect and serve.
Right.
Now, when you take, and again, there's bad accountants. There's bad doctors. You can find someone at Delta Force, highest level of the Army, and say, how did they get through?
There are bad politicians, believe it or not.
A ton of them. The vast majority on the left right now, pushing for a whole bunch of crazy things. But the idea of more funding for the police, we go back to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That police officer that murdered George Floyd, I don't know him. I don't know his motives. I don't know how he thinks and how he lives his life. I know this, regardless of what he thinks and how he behaves, if he had Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu training, that never would have happened. That is the best example I've seen of a poorly trained police officer. The harsh reality is we need so much more money and so much more funding for police officers to be trained. And I've been calling for this for years, and all of my friends in law enforcement that I train with and I'm friends with will agree. If every single police officer and every single member of law enforcement was a minimum of a blue belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, that's basic couple of years of training, twice a week, the amount of issues that we're having like this would be cut by 90%. It's not going to solve anything, but it's a tremendously big piece to the puzzle. And the idea of just defunding the police and getting rid of police, I mean, the wolves, that 10% of wolves, those rapists, those kidnappers, those child molesters, those murderers, those wolves are licking their chops right now, hoping. And you look at what's happening in Seattle, the amount of rapes and the amount of assaults and the craziness that's happening there. It's probably not all being reported.
Well, no.
And those are wolves.
Yeah,
those are wolves in their environment hunting and just terrorizing sheep, and there's nothing the sheep can do.
There are a lot of people who are calling to defund the police while hiring their own personal security people. There are people who say, hey, we should limit we should take away the Second Amendment and limit firearms, but they themselves hire people who carry firearms. I mean, look, there's hypocrisy everywhere. I love this idea of having the police learn Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and they probably don't even need to speak Portuguese.
They don't.
What's this thing? It says in the notes for your book, it says, you're going to teach us how to learn speak a new language in 21 days. What's that about?
Well, I'm not personally going to teach you.
In this book, Brent teaches you too.
Yeah. No, it's basically laying out how to acquire those skills. So that's in the chapter on becoming Jason Bourne. I've been obsessed with Jason Bourne and the idea that there's actually a guy like that out there. And I've actually met a few that may or may not work for three-letter agencies that have these incredible skills, that have multiple passports, that are able to speak four or five languages conversationally, that have all these skills.
I don't have those skills, but I speak five languages.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I started looking into all this, and it's not as hard. I think the biggest misconception is a lot of us took, you know, Spanish or French or German in junior high and high school and realize now that you can only say, you know, four or five words and you can't communicate because the process in which they're doing it in high school is actually wrong. There are so many amazing programs out there right now, like Babbel, like Pimsleur, like my friend at fluentin3weeks.com. I mean, fluentin3months.com.
Duolingo.
Duolingo.
I'm actually learning number six right now, Russian.
There you go. And, it's just a matter of taking action, and
you know
it's
what's
only
funny. My daughter is learning Japanese on Duolingo, and she's studying Latin. And the way we study Latin is not by speaking it, because nobody speaks Latin. So first of all, pronunciation basically sort of doesn't matter, although it matters to me. But secondly, you learn by studying the grammar and then putting the grammar rules into practice, which is similar, slightly similar to the way that they teach language in public schools today. It's a very logical way of learning a language, but it is very labor intensive. You memorize a lot and you work with, you manipulate the language a lot. But Duolingo is immersion based, meaning they just throw you in. They start throwing words at you and ask you to translate. They show you pictures and then say the word and this kind of thing. And it's highly effective, but she's sort of railing against it because she has now learned how to learn Latin. She thinks that you learn a language by learning how to write it and then learning how to read it and that, you know, and learning all the rules. And Duolingo won't tell you the rules. It gives you the different sentences, and then you have to sort out for yourself what the rules are, which is the way we learn language organically, right?
Absolutely. And the fact that you're doing that program is awesome. And it's like you were mentioning in regards to some other forms, it's labor intensive. And right now, I mean, people are, you know, they're on the go. They don't want to sit and put 2 hours of learning a language.
It's COVID times, baby. If you've got the COVID shutdown, you've got time to learn a language now. Take advantage.
Absolutely. But then we can get into attention to detail and, you know how much people actually want to focus on one thing. And when you're at home, you actually have more distractions.
Yeah, that's true.
At the end of the day, it's just about taking action and adding more tools to your tool belt and being bilingual or trilingual. And it's not about getting fluent. I mean, it's not about reading and writing in a language. It's
correct.
About being conversational. Can you go into a restaurant and the 20 minutes you're there, order a sandwich or a bowl of soup, talk to the server, say hi to the bartender, talk to the table next to you in that language and leave? That right there to me is someone who can successfully speak conversationally in another language.
Sure.
And it's such a huge skill.
Well, and I'll tell you something.
I
love this. I love that we're talking about this because language is obviously a favorite thing of mine. I speak a little bit of Tagalog, which is the Filipino language, and whenever I'm near a Filipino person or on the phone with them, I will throw a few words in Tagalog at them, and they, for their part, they never expect somebody who's not Filipino to speak any of their language. And they're always so flattered and so lovely about it. And, oh, you speak a Tagalog. Oh, is it good? You know, how good, you know, they get excited. People get excited when you address them in their language. Even if you mess it up, they appreciate that you're making an effort. Everybody except the French. French don't like it because we bastardized their language so badly. they tend to dislike it. But it's such a great point that you make, that you don't need to be perfect. But we're taught in school that we, you know, everything needs to be perfect. You got to get that A. You got to score well. And what you're saying is make the effort, improve yourself every day, because at the end of a year or 5 years or 10 years, you're going to look back and go, wow, I've come so far. Whereas the mindset today is sort of like you finish school, you're done, you know, stick a fork in it, turn you over, and then people stop. And when you're stopped, you're actually going backwards, right?
100%. And you're obviously proficient in languages. You're the first person I've talked to on this radio tour I'm doing that's actually really in the languages. So I would say to your listeners, if you're listening to this and you're like, well, you know what? I do have some extra time. I could probably chop off some of the 5 or 6 hours a day I'm putting into Netflix or Fox News. Why don't I look into this? I would strongly recommend learning a language.
By the way, he said Fox News because I did tell him that you guys are pretty much conservative. He didn't say Fox News like, hey, why are you watching Fox News? That wasn't what that was. I just want to point that out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would say, you know, one, focus on a language. Just like when I talk to people about, you know, developing skills, I tell people to develop skills that make you attractive to the marketplace. And in the same sense, focus on languages, one, that you're going to be able to speak with people. I mean, if you're learning Sanskrit, which Sanskrit's a dead language, you can't actually go out and use that anywhere. But learn Spanish, learn Italian, learn Portuguese. These are all romantic languages and they're easy. For example, there's a lot of similarities. So with Italian, Spanish, and Portuguese, just counting to four. So Italian is una, due, tre, quattro. Spanish, uno, dos, tres, cuatro. Portuguese, un, dos, tres, cuatro. You can see there's tremendous similarities just in those four words. So if you're learning learning a language that has other languages, romantically based or Latin based,
sure,
as far as origin goes, you're going to be so much better off. So if you're speaking Portuguese and you're getting really good at it, you're going to be able to learn Spanish. You're going to be able to learn other languages that tie into that so much easier than if you just went off and said, for example, my wife is Vietnamese. She was born in Vietnam. She came over here when she was four. That is, for an English speaker, easily in the top five hardest languages to learn. The way you move your mouth, the way words are said, everything is essentially backwards. And it's a really difficult language. I know about 10 words, and it's
I'm disappointed. You should be fluent by now.
Yeah,
I'm kidding. Listen, we're running out of time. We're running out of time. Brent Magnuson, it's been such a pleasure. I didn't expect to keep you on this long, and I'm sorry for that, but it's been a pleasure speaking to you. The name of the book is Roger Up. Roger Up is a blueprint for living life to the fullest and thriving in the face of adversity. It's funny because Kevin's in my book is embracing adversity. And so I love your attitude. I think people can learn a lot from you. So go get the book, Roger Up. And Brent, thanks so much for coming on the program with me.
Sam, I appreciate the time. And in Portuguese, nice to meet you. Muito prazer.
Oh, obrigado. Bye-bye. Okay, that was kind of fun. I do like talking language, and I speak Swedish, which is really useless. Although, if you're watching a film and they have actors who are speaking Swedish, like my family turns to me and goes, typically, and they'll say, "Is it good? Like, what's he saying? Like, is it any good?" And I'm a pretty good judge of whether somebody's actually Swedish or not. Also Russian, actually. I have an ear for Russian. I'm really enjoying, I will say, I'm on Duolingo every night because I have these exercises that I have to do for my back, which cause me to lie flat on my back, staring up at the ceiling. And so instead, I put my little phone in front of my face and I do my Duolingo. And I actually am learning Russian. And I'm doing it for 20 minutes a night. Like, it's nothing. But because I have to do this exercise in order to improve my back, I'm committed now to doing the language. And why did I choose Russian? I don't know. I just always kind of felt like I wanted to learn Russian. I really should learn Spanish. He's absolutely right. Learn something that's useful, for crying out loud. I don't know why I chose Russian. And, you know, every week or so, I'll think, I really should just change languages. But now I'm sort of invested. I've achieved certain levels and stuff. All right. So they're coming for the CHOP guys, the Capitol Hill opposition protest, something like that. These people are just absurd. There was a fatal shooting. So Seattle Police Department released the body cam footage of officers that were responding to a fatal shooting. And now the mayor apparently is saying, you know what? I'm done with you guys. They showed up at her house, apparently, which, you know, she's not going to like that, guys. What are you, idiots? And so even though she was, I think for a while, she was fairly much in support of it. Now they've cleared the autonomous zone. She's declared that it's an unlawful assembly. She was the one saying it's like a street fair. It's like a block party. She's changed her tune. The police officers were equipped with protective gear. They began clearing the tents and the barricades and took care of that. She declared that it was an unlawful assembly. She said the city's obligation under the First Amendment do not require the city to provide limitless sanctuary to occupy city property, damage city and private property, obstruct the right of way, or foster dangerous conditions. That's actually according to an executive order that was made public. It notes that shootings that took place in and around the zone and two teenagers have been shot dead, including a 16-year-old early on Monday. It's dangerous stuff. So this is a move in the right direction. And I will say, there were a number of people calling for President Trump to involve himself. And unfortunately, that's like, in my mind, the best analogy that I can give, and this is a little bit rough around the edges, but it's like your son is robbing people in order to pay for his drug habit. Why don't you just go and give him drugs? Or why don't you just go and give him some money? And the answer is no. You call the police. You turn him in. You don't sort of take care of the problem and sweep it under the carpet, which is what I think Trump would have been doing. He would have been, and then he would have been, in a sense, liable. No, it's the city that's liable. It's the mayor who's liable. And I hope that Seattle has learned a lesson and will vote these people out of office in the upcoming election. And the only thing that I can think of is she's seeing this also and saying, if I can take care of this now, I can redeem myself before November. But I don't know. All right. So we're being joined now by Tara Durant. I don't know if you remember, I went over this story a couple of days ago. She's an elementary school teacher. She's married with three kids. She's a resident of Virginia. She's been there for 23 years. She was the 911 call that I played for you a few days ago when the Antifa movement surrounded her car. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate you speaking out. I mean, you were put in an untenable position. So why don't you just walk us through, how did you get into that position in your car with your kids, with a child at least, right?
Correct. Yes. Our 12-year-old, our youngest child.
Your 12-year-old?
Correct.
Okay. So where, just describe the scene. You were just driving somewhere, right?
Correct. We were returning home from a shopping district kind of on the other side of downtown Fredericksburg. And my usual route to come home, we live on just on the other side of the city, is to drive through downtown Fredericksburg. It's I love to go through our town. I love to see the people out eating in the restaurants and the progress that's being made. It's just one of those small joys I have. And I drove through the city, not through what I would say the main thoroughfare, but one of the more main arteries. But when I drove down, there was no indication that that traffic was going to be rerouted, that there was a protest, coming up. Just drove into it, and so these people are occupying what they're called crosswalkers now. So they're occupying the crosswalks in like a square, and they just keep, they fill the crosswalks so no one is able to move.
So you got stuck in a traffic jam caused by protesters.
Correct.
And then okay.
Yeah, they just, I sat there and there was another car that eventually drove backwards up the road going the wrong way. And the protesters sort of celebrated that victory that they chased a car away. And I continued to sit there. And that's when I called. It was very clear that I wasn't going to get out of there. And they were starting to surround my car at that point. And when I made the phone call, I think that just started to gather more and more tension.
And could they tell that you were on the phone with the police or?
Yeah, I at the time I remember thinking they can tell.
Right.
That's my thought that I went through my head. I couldn't presume what they knew, but I felt in my mind they were watching how, I could see this crowd growing and realizing as I'm listening to the dispatcher just repeat, "I'm sorry, ma'am, we can't do anything. We encourage you to call and text City Hall," and my incredulity that, in fact, no one was going to come help us.
Right.
And I think they could sense it. That's how I felt at the time.
Right. And I'm sure that they saw some panic on your face and sensed that you were going to be a good target.
Yes.
So they.
Yes, absolutely.
Did they come into your car?
They were surrounding my car, and at one point in the call, I heard them say, "Get out of my car." And I think my daughter, it was behind her door. She was sitting directly behind me that there was we felt like there was sort of attempt to get in. And of course, I had all the doors locked.
Right. So they didn't actually get in the car, but.
No, thank goodness.
Yeah, but she was terrified.
She was.
And then how did you extricate yourself from this situation? Because the police weren't coming. The dispatcher said, "Well, take it up with City Hall. Go see the statement that was made." And of course, this is the argument for the Second Amendment is, how long does it take you to pull out your gun versus how long will it take the police to get there? Quite simply.
It's such an unfair position because I knew that if I proceeded slowly, they were going to attack my car.
That would be seen as aggressive behavior on your part.
Yes, exactly. And I knew that there had been, when the protests first began, there had been an incident in the city on a bridge that connects my county to the city. And the protesters blocked that entire bridge and car. It was in the middle of the day in a time you just wouldn't expect it to happen. And one of the protesters, this man was trying to drive through with his wife and 1-year-old baby in the back. This protester took his scooter and smashed the window and it got glass all over all of them, including the baby. That obviously got a lot of attention in our town. So that thought's going through my head.
Sure.
This is a very real possibility. This crowd has proved to be unpredictable. I don't know the threat level. I certainly didn't want to find out.
Right.
I knew that if I went slow, it was going to get a lot worse. I knew if I went fast, someone was going to get seriously hurt or killed. And that, I thought if I do make that decision, it really will depend on the judge and jury whether I'm deemed
right. You're going to be up on charges. You're at the mercy of the court, and it's a life. It's a life altering thing that you're choosing to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you're left as a sitting duck. You're absolutely left, and your options are none of them are good. So to answer your question, how I eventually got out of there, when there was one protester that jumped on top of my hood, and that's that part you can hear where I see the
right.
Initially, I was saying they're on my car. They were surrounded my car up on my bumper, and my daughter and I very clearly remember one of the protesters dancing in my bumper like she was in a strip club.
Okay.
Then when they jumped onto my hood, eventually there was a motorcyclist that roared up, and the protesters backed away from my car, and he was gesturing at me saying, "Get the something out of here," using language a lady shouldn't use. And I was baffled. I thought, is he here, trying to here to help me, or I was just stunned. You know, the whole progression, I was stunned. And we've been searching for video evidence of this, and I've seen that motorcyclist with these protest groups and several other, you know, videos. And so I know that he's aligned with them.
But he basically saved you.
He did, but I don't think he was doing it to save me. I think his intentions were for their sake, not ours.
So explain that. In what way? Like I almost follow you, but in what way? What where's the benefit for him calling them off? Did he see you were on the phone? Was he afraid of authorities coming? What do you suppose?
I'm only supposing, this is only my thought, yeah. Because it was... I thought he probably recognized that things were going to take a turn for the worse.
Right.
And someone was, these people that he's aligned with were going to get hurt. Charges were going to be filed. I really couldn't presume.
You know, it's possible that, it's possible he recognized that if you floored it because you were so scared that people right. were going to get hurt. And he didn't want that either. We don't know. But but that's amazing. I understand you're still having some problems sleeping. And your daughter, how's your daughter?
We're getting through it. You know, we got a lot of work to do.
Yeah,
I know she's never going to forget it. And you know, we've turned to our faith a great deal. We've talked a lot about. That when you are children of God, you have to stay, you can't turn to whatever evil wants, which is all of those negative, bad hatred feelings. And, you know, so it takes time to get through this, but we say if ultimately we want to be children of God, we cannot succumb to
Don't cry, because then I cry, and then it's very hard to do a radio show. I will say that it's fine. In attempting to understand what these people want, it sometimes helps to understand that they have been miseducated, and they think things that are untrue, but they know them to be true. So their truths are... perverted, and it's too bad, and they also probably don't have God in their lives, and so they don't understand the definitions of good and evil in a classical sense, and
right.
It makes it easier to forgive them because they don't know what they do, right? So that's
right.
And that's what Jesus said: forgive them, for they know
right.
not what they do. They
right.
know not what they do. Now, secondarily to that, she was afraid. And so it's correct for her to have been afraid, and yet that's what we have our faith for. And so we are told, be not timid, but have faith. So, you know, and it's, you're right. And it's going to take some time, but focus on the fact that you were preserved, that there was some strange adversary who cleared your path. That's enormous, right? And so focus on that and tell her, hey, focus on the fact that one of our adversaries cleared our pathway.
Right.
We had an intermediary who came from the other side. That's amazing. Right. And focus on that. And you know what? If that doesn't bolster your faith, I don't know what, right? That would be the one thing that I would hang my hat on. But that's not what this program is about. This program is, sorry, we got a little bit off track. This program is just about, you know, I want people to understand. And we know this intrinsically, but it makes such a difference to hear your story, to hear someone tell the story. Just a completely innocent bystander got caught up in the violence of the movement. And it is a violent movement. And I will be getting into that in just a minute. I'm going to let you go. We've had protesters in our area and the police were all over it. In fact,
that's the answer. Yeah. That is the answer.
We drove home and there were so many police. We were like, oh my gosh, what happened? Nothing. The protesters gathered and the police came out in force. And for you to make that call, so you need to actually be part of a campaign to clean up Fredericksburg and put in City Hall people who understand law and order, because right now you don't have that.
No, it certainly has emboldened a lot of people. This has ceased to be a protest. There's no question. And there have been a lot of backlash against the city council, against the mayor, the city manager. And a lot of people have vocalized, we simply will not go into downtown Fredericksburg until we feel safe. We're not trying to boycott any businesses, quite the contrary. But our beautiful town cannot be taken over. You cannot let the tail wag.
And you got to reach out. And the businesses, they have to band together and say, hey, we can't have this. You guys are going to put us out of business. But they've got to fight for themselves. And you know what? This is going to make your daughter a fighter. So you just tell her she's been preserved and she's experienced this because she needs to be a fighter.
She's a fighter. There's no question.
No doubt.
I know she's going to be okay. We got to get there.
Yeah, I get it. I love the fact that you're speaking out. Thank you so much for doing that and continue to do so. So appreciate you coming on. Thanks, Tara.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Wow. She cried. I'm sad. I'm sad that she cried. But look, we are seeing moves in the right direction, which make me happy because in Seattle, the officers are just moving in. They moved into the Capitol Hill organized protest, CHOP or CHAZ or whatever the heck you want to call it. They were attempting to locate a shooting victim. They were met by a violent crowd, but they walked in with their guns, of course. And the officer, you could hear him say, please move out of the way so we can get to the victim. All we want to do is get to the victim and provide them aid. And the protesters, you can hear on the video, on the surveillance or the body cam footage, put your guns down. They're shouting at the officers like that's going to happen. So now the mayor has come out and she's singing a different tune. And we'll see. We'll see. But we ought to recognize now that BLM is a Marxist organization that has nothing to do with racial equality and everything to do with destroying this nation. It's even in their sort of statement of organization, their rules, their mission statement. They aim to dismantle the patriarchal practice that requires mothers to work double shifts. What? So that they can mother in private, even as they participate in public justice work. I mean, it's just crazy stuff. Crazy. Okay, let's move on, shall we? That was very serious stuff this morning. There's a retired Florida sheriff's deputy who's flying a Blue Lives Matter flag. It's like a black and white American flag, an American flag in black and white, but the center line through the flag, the first stripe that's under the stars, is blue. It's lovely. And the HOA told him, hey, pull that down. And he's like, no, I won't. They sent him a violation notice. His name's Sean Kennedy. It said, during a recent inspection, it was noted that you have an improper flag displayed on your property. While we support your patriotism, the American flag does need to be the traditional American flag. Blah, 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 blah. And he said, well, I'm not taking it down. And actually, he points out that the flag is to honor those who have served, who are currently serving, and those who have died in the line of duty protecting our liberties in this great country. So, you know, he just told them where they could stick it, I guess, which is, I think that, you know, he has the right to do that. They'll probably try to issue him some sort of fine because I'm sure they have some bylaws or whatever. I don't know. Okay. Hold on. What? I was going to talk to you guys about a story that came out in the Babylon Bee. I love the Babylon Bee. Are you following the Babylon Bee at all? Because they did a story recently on MasterCard. And the idea is MasterCard has to now change its name because it has Master in the name. And I just love that. We're just going to undo everything. Right? I don't see where it ends. The good news is that the left is basically eating itself. So it will end. I mean, that's in a sense, that's the good news. But I like the fact that the Babylon Bee is taking this stuff on with satire, because satire is a very effective weapon, frankly. So the title of the article is MasterCard changes its name to Equality Card. Did you come up with that? Popular multinational financial services company, MasterCard Incorporated, which is known for its extensive line of credit, debit, and prepaid cards to process payments between card issuing banks and merchants, has released a statement that they will now be known as Equality Card. The shift in branding follows other companies who have made major branding changes due to their negligence in propagating racial stereotypes in America, like Aunt Jemima syrup, Uncle Ben's Ready Rice, and Land O'Lakes butter. The massive change in branding awareness comes in the wake of protests pointing out how far we need to go in stamping out systemic racism, even if it is found in beloved food products. I just think people should stop using Aunt Jemima syrup. I think it's racist to use syrup. How about that? We'll just issue a blanket statement. And by the way, not using syrup is racist against Canadians. Okay, keep going. Financial products are now coming under fire as many consumers pointed out that the troubling phrase Master was in the name of MasterCard. Somebody actually tweeted that you could have in a car, you have a master cylinder and a slave cylinder. I think I'm getting those terms right. I'm not a car mechanic, but you do. You have the master version thing and then the smaller slave version, which is enslaved to the master. It's terrible. Are we just going to eradicate the word slave and then nobody will know that it ever existed? They'd have to ban the Bible. There's slavery all throughout the Bible. Many think, apparently, that there's a checkered past with MasterCard. They wonder where all the slave cards went. Honestly, in 2020, there is no place in America for terms like master, said Ajayapal, or AJ, Singh Banga, Equality Card's chief executive. Quote, that is not an image we want to evoke when consumers engage in financial transactions that might place them massively in debt to us through late fees and massive interest charges. Equality Card will always promote the equality of cardholders of all races. It's true. We live in a culture that enslaves us, but we're in such denial that we've got all of this other stuff going on. They're also going after now MasterClass online classes, Masterpiece Theater, master's degrees. How dare they? And of course, Jedi masters, those will be banished as well. We just have to get rid of it all. Just cut it all out. All right. Judith Bergman wrote an interesting article on Gatestone Institute. I do love this publication. And she wrote this. She said, well, Black Lives Matter and its sycophants endlessly debate changing the names of streets and removing statues. They ignore the staggering 40 million victims of actual slavery in the world today. And that includes an estimated 9.2 million men, women, and children currently enslaved in Africa. So we've got all the news reports of supporters of BLM vandalizing, tearing down statues of slave traders, slave owners, anyone who they perceive as having been in any way historically involved with slavery. But of course, they're all white men. In Bristol, England, a statue of the slave trader Edward Colston was pulled down and thrown into the harbor. In Belgium, statues of King Leopold were defaced. The actions have caused some local authorities to consider whether all statues perceived as offending current sensibilities should be removed. I heard Glenn Beck go online and say, hey, if you're going to tear down the statue, give it to me. I'll take it. Like, let me know. We'll come pick it up. I have a facility. I will store it. The London mayor, whose name is Sadiq Khan, announced a commission to examine the future of landmarks, such as statues, street names, and street names in the United Kingdom capital. But then, for that matter, Malcolm X. We're going to change the names of everything? Do you know how confusing that's going to be? And so she writes, it's not apparent how attacking old statues of people who have been long dead is supposed to help anybody, especially millions of Black and non-Black people who are still enslaved today. Think about those people if they have the opportunity to hear about these infantile tantrums, destructive tantrums, but tantrums nonetheless, that accomplish nothing. Yay, we tore down a statue. Woohoo! It appears that the woke activists of BLM and their many kneeling supporters do not care about the plight of modern slaves. Imagine if those people who are out there on behalf of BLM put their efforts to actually freeing slaves worldwide. 40 million of them today. Evidently, it's far easier and presumably more pleasurable to destroy Western historical monuments than to embark on the difficult work of actually abolishing modern slavery. In the United Kingdom, she writes, there's a shocking range of modern slavery, something that the local wokesters are happy to ignore as they bravely attack statues of stone and metal. According to the government's 2019 annual report, there are at least 13,000 potential victims of slavery in the United Kingdom, although the number dates back to 2014, perhaps questionable. In 2018, they did a global slavery index, and they estimated 136 people living in modern slavery just in Britain. And yet you have these children out defacing public property bought and paid for by you. All right, to finish up today, as I told you, this is my last week for a while. I'm going to miss this, but I'll be around on Facebook and Instagram and stuff. I have a little book here called F in Exams, The Very Best Totally Wrong Test Answers. So just for fun, I'm going to read you a few very bad, very wrong test answers. What is the lowest frequency noise that a human can register? What is the lowest frequency noise a human can register? And the answer is a mouse. What is the highest frequency noise that a human can register? Mariah Carey. Adam cuts his arm. Blood gushes out and is red in color. What does this show? It shows he's not a robot. He's a real boy. What is, these are all biology questions, by the way. What's a fibula? A little lie. Define enzyme, superhero of the cell. Define coenzyme, enzyme's sidekick. What does terminal illness mean? When you become ill at the airport. All right, that's it for me today. Thank you so much for listening. This is Sam Sorbo, the Sam Sorbo Show. I want you guys to go out now and have a great rest of your day.